Representatives Guttenberg, Edgemond, Seaton, Kawasaki, Roses.
We were in another meeting.
Wilson, and we're waiting on co-chair Johnson.
He'll be here.
Several things before us. I'm dying to get 128 resolution, either amended and passed or whatnot, and so let's take that first. Representative Seaton, would you make a comment with regard to K4?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. K4, the amendment that we have there that lists page 4, line 1, following equipment. That is the amendment that is dealing with the conceptual amendment that we passed the other day, and I believe we passed that unanimously. And this is Mr. Bullock's writing up of that conceptual amendment, and so I wanted to get it before everybody can see the actual language instead of our conceptual language that we have since we received it.
Okay, so K4 is actually a part of the bill as it stands now.
That's correct. The language is a little bit different. Would you like me to read the way the conceptual amendment was so people can see the difference or not?
Madam Clerk, is that helpful to you? Or do you care?
That would be good for the record.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the way the conceptual amendment was worded was we were adding a new subsection, cost incurred as a result of an action or inaction in violation of regulation or procedures adopted by the Pipeline Safety Integrity Organization or other appropriate agency, and it could have been Pipeline Safety Integrity Office, but that was the wording that we had. As you'll see, PSIO is not in here, but PSIO is to be under the Department of Natural Resources, so they've identified the agency or any subsidiary agency such as PSIO that would be adopting this regulation.
Excellent to get on the record. Thank you very much. The thing I want to bring up is page 3, number 19, and that is the only issue that's holding back passage of this bill onto the next committee. And my understanding is if we keep 19 in as it exists right in front of us, then this bill's next referral is judiciary. If we delete 19, we don't need a judiciary referral, the bill would then move on to finance without 19. The administration says they need 19 in there. But if the bill never passes, we don't have anything. And so it's a matter of urgency, I believe, to move the bill along. If you want to respect the wishes of the administration, you pass the bill with 19 in it. If you feel like that's not the right way to go, then you pass the bill with 19 out of it. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think we talked earlier about with 19, I think that we insist on a judiciary referral, which I've talked to the speaker, as you have, and that would happen, and the judiciary would have an opportunity to look at this. I've also talked with the chairman, and he is happy to receive this. Without 19, I think that we kind of go back and we could pass it on. But with 19, I think that I'm fairly insistent that I'd like to have some legal eyes look at this.
Well, I'm going to go off. I'm sorry, Representative Seaton.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in conversations, you know, with the administration, although they want, if the direction is to go back and look retrospectively, then they need something like 19. However, they are uncomfortable with the wording of 19 and the way it is. So if it's the will of the body to do something retroactively, some standards, I don't know what those would be, but hopefully somebody will get some better definition if there's going to be a standard set in the future. So.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. This bill originally had 19 in it, and it didn't get a judiciary referral. I think I think it should, it goes next to finance, where it'll be dealt with. And if they think it needs a judiciary hearing after they deal with it, I think it's appropriate. At that point, it can go back to judiciary. If right now it's on its path as it was set forth with 19 in it, I think we should just keep on that route.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To clarify, Section 19 changed actually a lot out of the Oil and Gas Committee. And when we heard it, it was a line and a half, and they actually amended portions to it. And I think, personally, I think a judiciary referral is probably appropriate now, if 19 goes ahead.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I guess before we have that discussion, or before we necessitate that, I'd move that we delete Section 19 from the bill.
Okay, that would be amendment number one.
Objection.
Point of order. I think the bill, in order to have action on the bill, didn't we have a vote already that was tied? And unless we vote to bring it back, it's not in front of us.
Then why are we talking about it?
I'm not aware of that rule.
I think the bill.
We did vote the bill.
We
didn't vote it out of committee, but I'm not sure that action moves the bill in some other place, some limbo.
But
I think the bill remains with the chair until it's voted out or kept.
So are you moving the bill back? I mean, I didn't hear a motion to bring the bill back, so I guess is where I was trying to figure out.
I don't mind doing that. I didn't know if it was necessary, but just so we cover our bases, I'll move that we return the, because if we're going to get a no vote on this, I'm still going to be hearing the bill.
Okay.
So I hope we allow ourselves to have the bill back again. But if you'll move to move the bill back in front of us again, is there an objection to moving the bill in front of us? Seeing and hearing none, we have 128 back in front of us for another vote. And now we have the amendment, which I believe Representative Seaton is ready to offer, is to delete 19.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And I wish to object.
Hold on a second. Okay. If the clerk is caught up yet. Representative Seaton has amendment number one. And if it is amendment number one, I'm not sure what amendment it would be. I want to get that number in front of us so it's the correct one.
I think it'd be number five.
Well, that is a conceptual amendment. I don't know which one it is.
Number six.
This has already been passed.
So this new amendment would be amendment number six. Okay, Representative Seaton moves amendment number six, and Representative Johnson has an objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am curious, as you'd mentioned, Representative Seaton, that the administration has some trouble with the language, but they need it. And I'm wondering, if can we hear from the administration on this? Is there someone here that might be able to shed some light on to the hows and whys, and do the how badly do they need it, how serious a problem it is with the language? I mean, before we delete it, is it a death knell to the bill? And if we do delete it, or if we don't delete it, how much problem do they have with the language? I'm wondering, does the administration have anyone here to testify, or do you have answers to that? Maybe
we've had conversation with the commissioner, Representative Seaton. Do you want to reiterate his thoughts on this, and then I'll add if I can.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Additional.
Yes, the commissioner said that if the legislature is wanting to, that they definitely want. Agreed with the language we put in the amendment that we just talked about, mm-hmm. as far as going forward with regulations.
Right.
If the legislature wants to go back and try to put in standards, they need something for standards if we want to go back to 2006 and have a standard other than the standards that are included in the bill, the gross negligence, non-payment by the other partners, oil spills, those other set of the 19 criteria. So if we want a new standard to go back for retrospectively, since the regulations aren't adopted yet, the language we adopted as amendment in 20 doesn't cover retroactively a standard lower than gross negligence other than the other partners in the oil field rejecting the bill, because if they reject the bill, then it's automatically not our plan.
It was something, he says he cannot write regulations without the authority and statute to write the regulations that allows him to, or to refuse, allow, to refuse the deduction that would be submitted. And it says without this, he cannot go back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So it's here to help him to go back and write a regulation to avoid having the deduction declared as part of a normal operating expense.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that explains it. And I do agree that if they need to do that, the regulation needs to be there. But now I would like to know what problems they had with the language. Do we know that?
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I'd like to clarify that the amendment that we adopted was a statutory part that they needed for regulations, because they wouldn't be writing retroactive regulations, but it would give them a standard to sue against, is the way I interpreted that, instead of going back and writing retroactive regulations that they were talking about as a standard. They did have problems that with the effect that this might have throughout the current language on the incentive in PPT, whether this, with the risk and uncertainty, whether that could serve to dissuade investment, but they didn't have new language to give us at this time. They're trying to contact the sponsors and figure out where they could go. But it's the best I can.
I think that's fair enough. Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. So just trying to read this.
You're talking the amendment?
I'm talking to the amendment.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's Representative Seaton's conceptual amendment that we've already voted yes on.
And it's this one here?
Correct.
Yeah.
If that's K,
yes.
K4?
Yes.
K4.
Yeah, that's already part of the bill. We just don't have a CS with the conceptual amendment in it, but he had it written so that we could at least look at what the conceptual amendment if it was in a CS.
So I just want to make sure that the retroactivity looks different on than it did on the previous bill, but it's still in there. Am I right? It looks like it's there on page 1 of the amendment, line 12, where it came out of page 4, line 20.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, I was just trying to follow that and get that, making sure that it's that's still in there.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton?
That's correct. My understanding, and of course, this was Ledge Legal that drew this up.
Yeah.
And all we did was give them the language that we had conceptually adopted. And there were two applicability sections, A and B, and that's why they put them in here, because the regulation section would start at the effective date of the regulations in here. So that was different than Section 19, which was March 31st, 2006.
Okay.
And 19, pretty much says that costs or a portion of the cost related to repair or replacement of improperly maintained equipment or equipment that had a diminished capacity as a result of the same thing. And I believe there's so many emails out now and so many newspaper articles out now and so many indications that what had happened was a reduction in corrosion inhibitor as a way to save money. And unfortunately, it saved money on back in 06, and it's costing money in 07. So that's the reason for allowing the commissioner to go back and say, we don't want the state to be paying for expenses related to negligence. And this bill essentially gives them that capacity to make that case. Representative Roses.
Thank you. And this is speaking to the amendment, but I need a clarification because I'm not sure. It ties directly into the amendment. On the conceptual amendment we passed before that is in writing now.
K4?
Yes. It makes reference here to the costs related to maintenance of oil, gas, facilities, equipment, infrastructure that occurred as a result of a violation of regulations. Are there currently regulations in place now as to how they're supposed to operate?
Let me ask Jane. Kevin Banks, you on the line?
Mr. Mr. Chairman, I am on the line, yes.
Well, Kevin, did you hear the question from Representative Rose's regarding...
I would appreciate it if he could please repeat that, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
Thank you. The question I asked was the conceptual amendment was made last time we were here that we just read into the record states that cost related to maintenance of oil and gas facilities, equipment, and infrastructure that occurred as a result of violations of regulations adopted by, and then it goes on. Mm-hmm. The question I had was, are there currently regulations in place that govern how the producers are supposed to be maintaining their oil and gas facilities, equipment, and infrastructure?
I believe there are regulations that govern, say, how DEC reviews facilities, and the intention was is to have a gap analysis over the next several months to see if new regulations would have to be added. There could also be, I suppose, regulations from Department of Transportation and other agencies.
Okay. Thank you.
And I guess the question is, if indeed there are regulations, do we need the bill at all to go back and deny the maintenance costs?
Oh. I'm sorry, is that question directed to me, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, yes, it was.
Well, here again, what the regulations that we would be looking at are really focused not on whether or not it relates to an exception for tax. And what I believe is the intent of this language is to create a situation where if a regulation in place which is addressing maintenance or proper care of the facilities is violated, why then costs related to that are subject to the disapproved allowance. And so to answer your question, I'm struggling with sort of trying to fit the PSIO into a into this category into the revenue bill, except as a consultant. But I, having said all of that, I think what we have here is a situation where what the bill is trying to do, or what this amendment is trying to do, is that on the face of it, if you're incurring costs as a consequence of violating some regulation related to maintenance, why then the cost is disallowed.
Okay, I think we knew that. Representative Roses?
Yes, I just wanted to follow up. And this is not a cost for Mr. Banks. This is would be more, I mean, a question. This is more or less a question regarding whether or not the number 20 that we have here, which is the conceptual amendment, does it not in essence capture most of what's in 19? So isn't this somewhat redundant? And so therefore eliminating 19 eliminates the redundancy, because what 19 talks about is the cost associated with, determined by these various commissioners, for any consideration that would be related to repairs or replacement of equipment, shutdown of the facility as a result of improper maintenance or negligence. And then in the third part, operating expenses occurred as a result of a diminishment capacity as a result of improper maintenance. So if in 20 we're talking about any cost related to the maintenance of oil and gas facilities, equipment, and infrastructure, they're incurred as a result of a violation of regulations, isn't that what 19 says?
Mr. Banks?
Mr. Chairman, the way I read 19 when it first was proposed is that it gave the or created a setting where the Department of Revenue, upon either through audit or some other way, begins to question whether or not a cost is related to some kind of improper maintenance, could then turn to the Department of Natural Resources for advice about whether that was true or not. And then there was language written to kind of guide that kind of advice, you know, whether or not the some standards had not been met or something like that. So it seems to me that by including this this piece with the you're selecting now a circumstance where a regulatory violation constitutes an improper cost. It seems to me to be slightly more specific than 19.
And the good or bad? My understanding from the commissioner was the bill lets him go forward. That's not a problem. Without 19, he can't go backwards. And that's the reason for 19. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if, you know, with 20, and we're talking about regulations, and I want to make sure I state this properly, and I probably won't. Can we retroactively apply regulations that have yet to be written? Or when we do this, are these the regulations that are in place today?
That was my previous question.
Yeah, I kind of thought so.
Okay. Representative Wilson, a turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin, I understood what you said a while ago when you were asked if there were any regulations in place. However, the amendment that now is in the bill says that that as a result of a violation of a regulation adopted by the person in the Department of Natural Resources who is the lead person for exercising oversight over the maintenance of oil and gas facilities, equipment, and infrastructure. Does the Department of Natural Resources anywhere in there have regulations that would cover this?
Mr. Chairman, let me try to answer that. I don't believe that at the moment the Department of Natural Resources has articulated in regulation what maintenance and requirements are. We rely on our lease contracts and the general scope of our lease stipulations that govern the whether or not activities conducted on the lease are appropriate. And so what we're talking about now is expanding those concepts into a more regulatory framework.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure that we're that I relate as accurately as I can the conversations that I've had with the administration. Going forward, they think that the amendment that we put in is very vital to them to have regulations that if they're violated, the costs go away. They can go back, but if they go back now, they're going back under one of the standards that's in the law. That is, they're going back for gross negligence or willful misconduct, or they're going back because the partners rejected the bill because it wasn't done as a prudent operator should do. So in the lease agreements up on Prudhoe Bay, my understanding is that the operator bills specifically the other partners, and if there's something in those billings that, like overhead in BP's headquarters, they say, we're not paying for that. And it's the same way, they have a number of clauses in there that they don't pay for. And we have not gotten, my understanding as of today, the other partners have not been billed for the BP spill and shutdown pipe replacement. So we don't know whether they're going to reject them or not. So the purpose of 19 is to go back and have a different standard that's lower than gross negligence. And it really is only going to apply if the other partners accept the bills and say, oh, that replacing this pipe and all is okay. That's part of our agreement. And wasn't a screw up on the operator's part. But that's what 19 does, is give them another standard. Sometimes it would be saying a simple negligence standard, although that's a question about judiciary, because as it's been read, improper maintenance is not necessarily the negligence standard. It may be in some cases lower than that. And so that's my full understanding of what this is. And if we want them to go back, and look at a standard that's lower than those that are incorporated in here, the gross negligence, willful misconduct, or the exclusion, then 19 is needed.
Mr. Iverson, are you available?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any comments you want to make?
I would just like to say that I think that's a pretty accurate summary. And I certainly don't know the status of whether those costs have been billed by BP to any of the other working interest owners in the unit. I obviously wouldn't know the results of that if those requests for payments have been approved or denied one way or the other. But I think that the characterization that Section 19 would look back to fill that piece between where gross negligence stops and where the operators wouldn't be, or where those costs would be denied between the working interest owners, it would fill that gap.
Thank you. I have a piece of paper that was left on my desk here that has it's from Black's Law Dictionary. It's got the definition of negligence, and it has the definition of gross negligence. And since that seems to be really what we're talking about, is does the state have the ability right now to exempt those costs under the gross negligence definition? And if we don't think they do, and we want to lower the standard to simple negligence, then it's probably important that we understand the difference between the two. And gross negligence, as it says on here, is a lack of slight diligence or care, a conscious voluntary act or omission in reckless disregard of a legal duty and of the consequences to another party who may typically recover exemplary damages, also known as reckless, and so on and so on. And so I think certainly the conversations that we've had and some of the emails and things that we've had before us doesn't look to me like the gross negligence is going to be that difficult to prove, since it says a voluntary act or omission in reckless disregard of a legal duty or in regards to whether you're going to harm another party. If you go to simple negligence, it just says a failure to exercise the standard of care that a reasonable, prudent person would expect.
And I read that too. I had the question of a legal duty. Is the injection of a corrosion inhibitor smart or a legal duty? Representative Wilson?
And I don't have a clue to the answer of the question I'm going to ask. But this is just a dictionary's definition. And don't we have in our statutes definitions for gross negligence and negligence, and that's what we'd go by, not by what's in a dictionary.
Since it's Black's Law Dictionary, I'm guessing that may be the one we refer to. I don't know that we have a dictionary. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I think this discussion pretty much exemplifies why this needs to go to the Judiciary Committee. I think we've just kind of spelled it out in our very own, you know, my very simple way that, you know, maybe we leave it in, send it to them, let the administration get the language they want, the things they want, let them fine-tune it there, because I'm pretty sure the Finance Committee is not going to be much better equipped than we are to deal with the legal issues of this. Let's send it to the Judiciary. Let's keep 20, send 19. It was significantly changed in oil and gas. I think it merits a Judiciary referral. And I'm not equipped to make those decisions. I think the administration needs some time to find out what problems they have with the language. I think it needs to be in there. I agree with Representative Seaton that we do want to be able to go back and hold people's feet to the fire, but I think it needs to be done in a way that the administration can live with and that is right. And I'm not sure that I'm prepared to make that kind of decision.
Okay. Well, at the moment, 19 and 20 are still in there. Wherever it goes, unless we do something, it's got 19 and 20.
Right now there's a motion to remove 19, and he objected.
I will not remove my objection. I think that that 19 needs to be in there for the reasons, the exact reasons that, that Representative Seaton discussed. It gives him the ability to go back. But I think it needs to be cleaned up, and I think it needs to be cleaned up with the administration's help, and I'm not sure we're getting it.
Well, in that case, let's dispose of this amendment, amendment 7?
Amendment number 6.
Six is to remove section, not section 19, so let me clarify. To remove page 3, line 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton?
Section 19.
That's going to change, though, isn't it?
Goes line 19, page 3, through line 1, page
4. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. So let me go backwards and describe it as where it. Under section 1, all of item 19. There is an objection, and we now, when the clerk gets a chance, need to vote on this removal.
It's a simple majority, right? Still 5 either way.
So, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Wilson?
Who gets called first?
You. Oh, boy.
Start elsewhere?
Just say pass.
Yes. Representative Coring is absent. Representative Roses?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgemond?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Fettenberg?
No.
Co-Chair Johnson?
No.
Chair Gatto?
No. So, with that in place, 19 is remains. 20 is already in there. This bill's got to go somewhere. And whether or not it's scheduled to go to finance. I'm perfectly happy. We had this vote once before on letting it go to finance. The vote failed on a 4-4 vote. Unless somebody here is willing to change that vote on how they voted on that previous vote, we'd get the same result. So what I'm going to do is say, let it go to judiciary. I hope that'll change one vote, probably at least one.
If it goes to judiciary, I'm there, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a good bill. I think it needs to pass, but it needs to be looked at
and,
very closely.
With 19 and 20 in there, I need a motion to move it out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, I would be delighted to make that motion. In so many ways. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would move that the CS for House Bill number 128, as amended with attached zero physical note, I think.
That's, I'll call it version K.
Version K, be moved out of committee with a recommendation to the Speaker that it be taken, get a judiciary referral, and with individual recommendations.
Well, that's clear. Is there an objection?
I would not mind dividing the question, the motion, between the judiciary recommendation and just moving it out.
Do you want two votes?
Yes.
I have no problem with that, Mr. You want me to?
Okay, so the first one would be just to move it out with a finance referral. The second vote.
Well, just to move, yeah.
Second vote would be. Well, it's going to finance. They're just trying to distinguish.
The Speaker has the ability to do whatever, you know, to give it a judiciary.
So just move it out, and then if it fails to move it out, then we'll go back and we'll move it out with a judiciary referral, or try to.
Could I rescind my motion and just make a motion that we move?
I'm going to let Representative Seaton speak first.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just, if we're dividing the question, I think the question of the judiciary referral is going to influence the votes on the bill move. And so if we're going to divide the question, the first issue should be whether we recommend that it get a judiciary referral.
Okay, and just then, as a separate vote.
As a separate vote, and then that will be probably determinant on how people vote to move the bill out or hold it.
And if we say no, then we'll go back to...
Holding.
Isn't it a great process?
All right, got to follow the rules. Representative Guttenberg?
Just regardless, the ability to, you know, we all have the ability to go to the speaker and give him our recommendations, whatever the vote is. He just as is easily or not required to follow the recommendations one way or the other.
What helps, I don't mind going to the speaker and say we had 8 members present and we voted this way for a judiciary referral, assuming it passes, and be able to tell them that. That's the weight that what I would give to this vote. So I'll take that message to the speaker. So with Representative Johnson has withdrawn his motion. Now we have before us, we don't have it before us, but we do have an opportunity.
I would like to make a motion that we take a sense of the body as to whether or not the committee would recommend that this bill get a judiciary referral.
Okay. Is there an objection to giving the bill a judiciary referral? And I will object. Madam Clerk, this is for a sense of the body.
So a yes means you want a judiciary referral, and no means you don't.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay.
And you might go first again. Lead the way.
I think Jenny's funny.
WDE. I figured this out.
This is for a sense of the body.
Sense of the body. Okay. Representative Coring is absent.
Almost. Really does rotate through, doesn't it? You're going to be really, really close to last.
Last.
I think I'm last.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Gatto?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Not bad, huh?
Mr. Chairman, may I please?
Now make a new motion.
Make a new motion.
And then we can get on with something different.
Yes.
This would be probably this 8th hour or 9th hour of this, like a jail.
Seems almost. Like 12. Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that the CS for House Bill number 128, designated as amended, be forwarded on to the next committee of referral, whichever the speaker might add that.
We call it version K.
Version K with individual recommendation and attached physical notes.
And I'll object.
Okay, Representative Seaton objects.
And Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to put on the record that I'm not opposed to having a standard, but I'm afraid that the standard that we have in 19, it puts uncertainty and risk into PPT under the profits tax bill, and it could lead to not sanctioning of projects in Alaska by the oil companies. And I think that you know, we've tried very hard to stimulate investment and development and exploration, and so that is my concern with this bill. It's not a big concern, so I appreciate this. And I'll
objection is removed. Is there another objection? Bill 128 passes the Resources Committee and moves on to some other place.
Oh wait.
Yeah, I figured that. Did I miss
it's a little wait
section
to,
21,
to wake up.
22? Want to add 22? Okay, I almost feel like we need a recess, but I'm not going to take one because we're going to move right on to Hunting 94, is it? House Bill 94. Marine Parks Edition / Hunting Allowed, Representative Kurtula, who is not present, but guess who is?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Aurora Hawk. For the record, I work for Representative Beth Kurtula, and she apologizes for not being able to be here today. House Bill 94 adds several, for the most part, small islands in Lynn Canal, north of Juneau here, to the existing marine park system. And these islands are currently used for various recreational purposes, such as hunting, fishing, camping, picnicking. and are very important to our local tourism business. And adding these lands to the marine parks would ensure that they are available for these purposes into the future. House Bill 94 has support from across the board, including the Alaska Outdoor Council and Territorial Sportsmen, Southeast Alaska Land Trust, the Audubon Society, Juneau Audubon Society, SEAC, Gold Belt, our local native corporation, and private inholders on one of the islands, the Juneau State Parks Advisory Board and the City and Borough of Juneau. I have one person who wanted to be here today to testify and was not available. His name is Gary Miller. He is on the Juneau State Parks Advisory Board. I do have his testimony for you, and it has also been given to the clerk for the record.
And for the record, we have version E in front of us. There was a previous CS for House Bill 94, version C, which is now superseded.
We need to adopt that, or is it before, before us?
So we need a motion to adopt CS for House Bill 94, version E, like Edward. Echo or something.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move CS for House Bill 94, version E, before it's a working document.
And seeing and hearing no objections, we have E before us. And Aurora, please continue.
Version E, the two changes that were made in that version are in the intent language. On page 2, lines 1 through 3, adds a section in stressing the importance of fishing in the Lynn Canal area. And in addition, on page 2, lines 16 and 30, changes the apron around the individual islands from the 20-fathom bathymetric line to the 10-fathom bathymetric line. The 10-fathom is clearly delineated on charts and does allow the parks the space they need to make any improvements should they choose to do so.
I see we've got several pages here with townships, et cetera. Marine parks, marine areas, I think I understand. Marine parks, are these designated by the state, include federal designations? Or the word park usually has a fairly significant definition. Don't mess with parks. No fishing, hunting, trapping. Don't walk in them. You could look at them, but only from a distance.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll defer to the Department of Fish and Game on, or not, to the Department of Natural Resources on this one. However, I would like to point out that this bill does have protections for hunting and fishing so that we can continue to do that on these in this park.
Well, it's not just this park. It's
in the marine parks.
In these parks. Can we get a division representative here? I need name and ID.
I'm Mike Eberhardt, Park Superintendent for the Southeast Area State Park System. And let me have you restate your question.
How many parks, where are they? Are they Southeast only? And does the word park have a significant meaning?
Okay, I'm in charge of all of the parks within Southeast Alaska, all the way down to Ketchikan and south. We have approximately 32 marine parks, which are the marine park is a little bit different designation than a park, only because of the statutory requirements that this body puts on that name. A park, for our purposes, does not entail no hunting, no fishing, no use. That we're very different than the National Park Service in that our mission statement is for the use and enjoyment of the land by the people of the state. So that's our primary mission, is to make sure that the people get to use the land. And especially in this situation, it's an issue of loving to death, and that there's a lot of concern by the user group that some active management take place.
And does this, if I were a scuba diver, would I be allowed to hunt in the marine waters where the park is located with compressed air and a scuba gun?
Correct. We have the restrictions only apply to resource damage, basically. That's our main purpose, is to prevent resource damage for the purposes set forth in statute that the park is set aside for, so that unless a person was causing some sort of damage within the unit.
It wouldn't be presumptive to say that dynamite is not allowed.
Probably correct. I mean, it'd be conditionally, if you had it held up off the ground and it didn't really cause, you know, I'd have to see the damage, you know.
Okay, a little levity. Representative Guttenberg?
Oh, no, thank
you. Questions. Representative Roses?
Just to follow up on that point, a perfect example would be one that I'm familiar with is Kachemak Bay State Park. And one of the coves that's involved in Kachemak Bay State Park is Sadie Cove. I'm fortunate to be one of about 26 people that have private ownership of land within that area because we've had it before it became a state park. And that has never been closed to fishing or hunting. And it, even before or since, it's become a state park. And that particular cove is about 8.5 miles deep. So there's about 17 miles of beach frontage just in that cove alone. And there's lots of people that dig clams, lots of people in the spring that go bear hunting, and lots of fishermen almost daily in the cove. So it's never been restricted from that at all.
Well, let me ask this. If herring deposit their eggs on algae or some marine plant,
kelp.
If a scuba diver were to decide to cut the plant so he could bring it up to harvest the eggs, would that be considered a destructive behavior?
The issue would be the harvesting of the kelp, and that in those instances we would defer to the Department of Fish and Game as far as the kelp row, and that we have lots of, you know, the harvest of animals and stuff, and we try very hard to stay out of that ballpark, me personally especially, because it's very contentious. And so over in Sitka,
bump it up.
That's right. We do allow the harvest of herring roe within all of our units within Sitka, where we currently get a lot of, they stick the branches into the water and they tie them to the beach and pull those out. The harvesting of the kelp, once again, it's not our expertise to say whether it would be harming the resource. We would defer to somebody who would answer that for us.
But if you were taking out sea anemones, you were taking out starfish, you were taking out sea urchins, that wouldn't be your concern, it would be bumped up.
Right, once again, we refer to the resource agency that dealt with the harvesting of those animals.
Representative Wilson, as the representative from Wrangell, greatly involved with marine parks, would you like to make a comment?
I'd like to make a motion.
I know what your comment is.
I have one question before we
One question, and then we'll let Representative Wilson, or two questions. We'll let first Representative Johnson, then Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to make sure that I clearly understand that we're really not expanding this park. We're just allowing we're making sure that it's available for hunting and fishing and verifying that it's public use. Are we actually expanding the size of this park?
Correct. We are adding the islands to the marine park system. There are currently some marine parks within the existing or adjacent to the existing
ones. Mr. Chairman, I have some additional questions.
So it is an expansion of the marine park system.
And I know there are a lot of numbers and coordinates and everything and segments and charts on it, but how much are we actually expanding the size of this park?
Uh-oh, here comes the exit.
And it probably says in my literature someplace that I should have read.
Yeah, the actual acreage is 12.1 square miles of land and 11.5 square miles of water.
And the square miles or linear miles or
square miles?
Square miles?
The 11.5 square miles is with the 20 fathom bathymetric line, not the 10, so it's less water.
So if we were just to run a tape measure, we would affect, you know, I would say I understand what you're protecting is down to a certain number of fathoms, but maybe that could take 500 miles before we reach that, or only 50 feet. So I'm curious, and if you don't know, it's all right, I'm curious. Are we adding how many miles of beachfront? And is it like 100% addition, or is it like a 5% addition? And I have no idea what I'll do with that information, but I am curious.
It is an addition of a lot of beachfront, but not substantial number compared to what we currently have. We do have, with the other 32 units, we have literally, you know, 100 miles or hundreds of miles of beachfront throughout Southeast Alaska that encompass all sorts of bays and estuaries and islands. This is strictly a...
And the reason I'm asking beachfront, is there any part of this beachfront that's University of Alaska land or private inholding or anything, or is this truly virgin beachfront?
This is... No, there are some inholdings within the park units. I think there's three or four private inholdings. The majority of this, the vast majority, like, you know, 99%, are only uplands that we have the tidelands to, so that we're getting the tidelands directly adjacent to. As soon as we get outside of where we are the majority of the landowner, in other words, you have a very large piece of land on Shelter Island that we're taking, and there's one small inholding, and we didn't exempt the tidelands in front of that private inholding that we do own. We would own those tidelands or transfer those to park management in front of those small inholdings.
Is there anyone in the areas where we're going to do this? Is there someone who would object and say, you shouldn't be doing this?
Mr. Chair, I have not heard any objection. I do have a letter from a private inholder and they do support the legislation.
That's just to follow up on that. And the important thing about that inholder is that he's currently developing that parcel for commercial recreation, and that he's worked with the division well, and we've worked well with him in establishing that parcel for that use.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. You said that there are several private inholdings in the park. How many are in the, are you talking about in the expanded park or total?
In the units that we're asking to expand, there's, and for clarification, I know of three, possibly four inholdings within the units that we're asking. I'm certain of three, but and they're very small inholdings. Whether there's four or not, I'm not 100% sure.
So we have support of 33% of the inholdings?
Or 25%?
Would you like to answer that question?
Please. No, I work the math.
Yeah, we haven't had objections from the other inholders, and they do know about, we have the support letter from the one person. The others have not given us support letters. We have not, didn't request them from them.
Representative Roses?
I think Wilson was first.
Pardon me?
She was first.
Okay, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this isn't changing any designation. I mean, in all those areas, they can hunt and fish and do things like that now, and all this does is assure that that doesn't change.
That would be correct, that it puts it into, it changes it from a fairly vague status into, once it becomes a statutory mandate, that the division no longer has the opportunity to either do a lease or other things that could restrict the hunting and fishing of that.
Thank you.
Representative Roses?
Do the individuals that currently have sites inside that park, do they own the land that they currently sit on?
That's correct.
And do you know whether or not the designation of ownership in that land includes much the same as mine, which says that their property line only goes to the mean high water mark, and so therefore anything outside of that would be state park regardless of what you did anyway, correct?
Correct.
So it really doesn't affect any of the land, it just affects the land underneath the high tide mark.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll be done.
Representative Johnson?
Can you tell me what kind of public notices have been issued? Is there any kind of public notice required before this is enacted? I mean, have these people actually been notified? I mean, we have one have they actually been notified? Is there an opportunity for them to respond, or is this going to come out of the blue to somebody?
I would be very impressed if it came out of the blue to anybody, because it's been proposed since 1991 when Fran Elmer brought it up. So it's and we've been in contact. I personally have been in contact with all of the landowners. So unless it's changed hands in the last 15 years, I don't.
Sounds like everybody in the state is in favor of this. I would assume you've heard from the NRA and the AOC, and they'll certainly be in favor of it. Are there groups that are not in favor of it?
Not that we're aware of.
I'm aware of, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg?
I was just going to point out that in the packet, you've got the Outdoor Council, the Territorial Sportsman, the Ron Juan Family Trust, the City, Gold Belt, Southeast Alaska Land Trust. I mean, it looks like it's across the board.
So thank the good minority leader for what looks like a pretty darn good bill. Representative Wilson.
I move CS for House Bill 94, Version E, out of committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal.
Okay. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, 94 moves from committee. That brings us to the last
thank
bill.
Thank you for your patience, Aurora.
I want to be able to have a shirt like that.
That brings us from the Marine Parks of Alaska to the United Nations, HJR 21. Representative Thomas. Thank but he is not here either, so.
We don't bear that close of a resemblance to each other either.
I thought you were here. Did I miss it?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas, and he's up in the Finance Committee. And thus
are they busy up there?
Isn't here.
They're doing
probably. Probably drinking a lot of coffee. If this looks familiar to those of you who were here in the last legislature, that's because this resolution was sponsored by the late Representative Elkins. It passed the House unanimously and went over to the Senate, passed there unanimously, and unfortunately it was left in the limbo file and kind of got bollocked up in the end of session last year. So we were willing to carry it forward. My friend, hockey associate, is in the audience here, so I'm going to use a hockey analogy that the team carried the puck all the way down the ice and left it in the crease, and we're just hoping to put it into the net. We've been hearing a lot of those analogies in finance lately, too. So, anyway, HJR 21 is about American and Alaskan sovereignty over land use decisions, and in particular pertains to UN designations known as World Heritage Sites and Biosphere Reserves. World Heritage Sites intend to protect and preserve places of cultural and natural significance around the world that are considered to be of outstanding value to humanity. As you can tell, I'm kind of reading off of the UN literature there. But those include things like the Great Wall of China, Independence Hall, and the Statue of Liberty, including as structures. But then they also include larger land units like national parks. And to give you a quick quote from the UN that is indicative of the way these things are looked at, they say that what makes the concept of World Heritage exceptional is its universal application. World Heritage Sites belong to all the peoples of the world, irrespective of the territory on which they are located. And I would venture to say that everyone here looking at the map behind us would look at sovereignty of that land as being to the people of Alaska and the United States, depending on our designations that we've made as in our system of government. And that's part of the problem with these designations. They can be made without any congressional oversight, and that's the primary and critical resolve in this resolution, asking that Congress pass and the President sign legislation that would mandate congressional approval of any sites nominated by the Secretary of Interior before these sites can be approved by the United Nations. And part of the problem with these designations is that they can be used in land use conflicts for the purposes of preventing development. And obviously, we have a very well-developed system of environmental laws in this country, and we can be capable of making those decisions according to those laws without the designations of the United Nations. So, in summary, this resolution doesn't seek to dispute these, the value of these programs in some areas of the world where nations may need more UN support than we do in order to do basic conservation of their parks. Perhaps that's necessary, and that's up to those countries to decide. And it doesn't in any way seek to end the World Heritage Program or the Biosphere Program, Biosphere Reserve Program. It merely just says that congressional approval of such designations should be required, and makes a statement that Alaska's local and state government should be consulted in these matters. With that, I'll be glad to try to answer any questions you may have. Oh, thank you, Debbie. I do want to, before I turn over to questions, I do want to propose a small amendment here, or have perhaps you propose it, that would, just makes some corrections.
That would be amendment number one, which have in front of us, which addresses page 2, lines 25 to 30, delete all material. Page 2, line 25, once we've deleted that material, to add quite a few organizations here.
Their land use, sites. It's, Mr. Chairman, this amendment is merely meant to clarify the way the previous resolution that this was based on had been drafted was not quite correct in terms of the locations in Alaska that it mentioned, and so this is just clarification.
Okay, I'll move amendment number 1 to HJR 21. Is there an objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 1 is adopted. I'm going to ask you a question on page 2-3, line 15. It says copies of this resolution shall be sent at, do you would Representative Thomas be concerned if we added the word electronically? I've seen it in a couple. It is on the bottom?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, it's on the last line.
Last few words.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Never mind. So we now have the resolution in front of us. Anyone want to comment on that before I go to testimony? Mr. Burrell, are you on the line? Steve Burrell, Miners Association, HJR 21.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Burrell. I'm Executive Director of Alaska Miners Association, and I'm testifying on behalf of the association. I believe you have our letter of support for this resolution in your packet, so I won't repeat that material, but I would make a couple other brief comments. Most of our examples that we're aware of have to do with how World Heritage sites have been used to block and harass mining projects. However, there are other areas of concern, and specifically in Alaska, the question is what impact would a World Heritage site or a biosphere reserve have on drilling, say, in the Chukchi Sea or a subsequent seafloor oil or gas pipeline? What impact would a marine biosphere reserve have on commercial fishing or whaling or harvest of other marine mammals? These are not really abstract fears. Around the world, such designations have been used against projects, and I believe there's a high likelihood that it would probably occur here too. We urge that this resolution be passed and distributed at the earliest possible date. Thank you very much.
And thank you. And we do have your letter in our packet. We also have your testimony in our packet. So thanks very much. I'm going to go next to Bobby Fithian, Executive Director, Hunters Association. Bobby, you on the line?
Yes, Chairman Gatto and members of the House Resources Committee. For the record, this is Bobby Fithian, Executive Director of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. We would agree entirely with Steve Burrell's comments for the Alaska Miners Association. This resolution represents a long-time needed sideboard for international designations of Alaska's lands. We would ask how many of us knew in 1979 when the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve was submitted and accepted to the United World Heritage Committee in Cairo, Egypt, or when in 1976 Denali National Park and Preserve was designated as an international biopreserve, or in 1986 when Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve was designated as a United Nations Biosphere Preserve, and then again in 1992 when it became a United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization World Heritage Site. The mission statement of these United Nations subcommittee is to protect our natural and cultural properties of outstanding universal value against the threat of damage in a rapidly developing world. Several worldwide World Heritage Sites and Biosphere Preserves are actively being managed, several of which are in Mexico. Some of those management activities include population of human densities, controlling those concerns, access to those sites, watershed and ecological concerns, as well as agricultural and industrial guidelines. There are 22 World Heritage Sites in the U.S. Additional nominated World Heritage Sites in Alaska include areas in the Aleutian Islands, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Denali National Park, and Katmai National Park. The U.S. Department of Interior has a full contingent of representatives. They've had them at all of the 26 sessions of the World Heritage Committees. And if any of you kept up with our Alaska Board of Game issues and concerns for the past decade and a half, you'd know that how much our Department of Interior management values differ from our constitutional mandates. And in regards to how the APHA plays into these designations, we are Alaskans and Americans. I would like to have a say or an influence on decisions creating these designations of public lands which our industry is dependent upon. And the way of life of our members and a substantial part of our $200 million a year revenue generation for Alaska that our members generate within these designations could easily be jeopardized by differing philosophical viewpoints of foreign nations. And Representative Thomas's HJR 21 addresses the oversight that Alaska and our residents need and deserve in these type of designations, and we encourage you to support this resolution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Appreciate that. We have your written testimony before us. It's part of the packet. And with that, is there anyone else who wants to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. And members of the committee, any comments? No comments, then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move HJR number 21 out of committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal notes. As amended, I'm sorry. Okay. It was amended.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, this bill moves from committee. Committee bills before me. And I want to thank our members for staying with us on this one. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.